My name is Giselle Schellekens and I work for Spark, which is a Dutch NGO. We're based in 14 different countries over the entire world. And I currently work for Spark in Rwanda, in Kigali, substituting a colleague who's currently on maternity leave. And I work as a regional program director for the Sub-Sahara.
For how long are you here?
I'm here for 6 months. Yeah, so from January until July.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's super interesting to live in a country that is so rebuilding after a conflict, where two parts of the society have been fighting so hard and now living in such a peace within 25 years. That's just super interesting to be here. And I'm very impressed by how quickly this country rebuilt itself and how quickly the peace is refound. And at the same time, this is such a fertile country. It's so green. There's such a big papayas here, so many bananas. I mean, I'm really loving the green and the vegetables and the fruits. Yeah.
When are you born?
I'm born on 16th of April 1989 in Gaborone, Botswana.
What was your background?
My father worked in the development aid as an education specialist. Therefore, we moved a lot from country to country, mainly in Africa. So I'm born in Botswana, just like my brother. And we moved to Nicaragua, Burkina Faso, and Kenya afterwards.
So you were already used to live in Africa, actually?
Yeah, well, East Africa is not very new to me. Sorry, it really, like, the first week I was here, it felt really like coming home. Just the atmosphere, the very nice people, the food. And yeah, it really feels like coming home. Yeah.
What did you study?
I studied a lot, actually. So when I moved to the Netherlands, my Dutch was not really good. So I started with vocational education, and then I went to bachelor's, and then finally finished my master's in Nijmegen.
Do you live alone with a roommate and family?
So in the Netherlands, I lived. I had my own house, and here I live with roommates, which is really, really nice. I live with Jamie, who's Korean, and Roy, who's Indian. And I think I was just speaking to Jamie this morning how rich we are that we are living abroad in Rwanda with three different nationalities under one roof. That's just super interesting, and we just learn a lot from each other, and in terms of ways we cook, in terms of customs, in terms of cultures, and it's just very interesting to talk to each other and just to learn from each other. Yeah, so we feel really rich.
Yes. What are the your cultural references in movies, music, and artists?
Yeah. So because I mostly grew up in Kenya, I believe that there was a certain limit to access of news. So my world was quite small, actually, when I grew up. I can say that currently I have an addiction for news. But when growing up, I just didn't have the access. Internet came a bit later than in Europe or in America. So we didn't have newspapers. So I think in terms of cultural references, I think it was more the Nairobi and the world I was living in that time, and not necessarily very globally. Yeah.
You didn't have, I would say, animates?
Yeah, no, I didn't really. We didn't watch cartoons. At least I can't remember. At a point we did have Cartoon Network, but I think I was more of an outside child. I really liked building huts in the trees, and I liked playing with a lot of animals that we had. We had more than 100 chicken, we had geese, we had ducks, we had dogs, we had so many animals, and I think I preferred being outside than watching cartoons inside. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't really have youth memories on that.
What was your favorite game?
I think hide and seek. Yeah, I think hide and seek was like the most exciting game, not to get caught and being hidden on a really good spot. Yeah. I think I still like that game, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Do you speak Swahili?
I used to a little. I do notice that when back in East Africa, I was in Nairobi a couple of weeks ago, it does come back. But I wouldn't say I'm an expert, definitely not.
Did you have a lot of Kenyan friends?
Well, I think as the same as in Rwanda, you have a big segregation between the expat community and the national people. And that was the same in Africa. I mean, I grew up in a very privileged position. We went to a very good British school. I wouldn't say that we had a lot of local friends. That's just still two very segregated worlds, unfortunately.
What was your heroes?
Because we grew up in Kenya, I as I said, I think the worlds were quite small. But I remember that there were two people that I remembered. One was David Sheldrick. He lived in Kenya for a real long time. He passed away now, but he came up for the elephants. He was a real the first fighter against poaching. And I remember as a child that I found him really interesting. And he has an orphanage nearby Nairobi where they shelter elephants. And I can remember that I really found this man starting this elephant orphanage such an interesting figure. And I think when I turned 12, my mother wanted me to get a bit more information and background on the Second World War, and she gave me the Diary of Anne Frank, and it was interesting because I really realized that Anne Frank had been hidden for so many years during the war, at the same age as that I was, living a free life in a privileged position in Nairobi. So yeah, these are the two people I can mostly remember in my youth that made an impression on me.
Do you remember your dreams when you were a child?
Yeah, so I actually always wanted to fight poaching. That was one of the things that interested me a lot. And when growing up, I really was convinced that the only thing I wanted to do in my life is contribute to society. I didn't really have a path, a specific way that I wanted to do that, but I think I could not imagine waking up in the morning and knowing that I would not be able to contribute to society and improving something in my surroundings. Yeah, that's something I felt really strongly from a very young age.
It's really interesting because a lot of people I interviewed want this, to contribute to the society, but not especially know how to do it, but
yeah,
want to make sense.
Yeah, and when I moved from Kenya to the Netherlands, I was like halfway puberty, and very frustrated that my parents took me out of my very comfortable life in Kenya to a new society where I knew nobody. My mother didn't even allow me to ride my bicycle, whereas all the people from my age category, they were allowed to drive their bikes to the town and everywhere. But I couldn't yet because I didn't know how to ride the bicycle that carefully yet. So I was frustrated, and I remember that my biggest dream at that time was just to go back to Africa as soon as possible. But then at a turning point, and I don't know what moment it was exactly, but I decided to, for some reason, I opened my eyes in a different way that I saw around me that there was a lot of inequality in the Netherlands also. And the gap is not as big as in Africa. But there is a gap. There is an inequality also in the Netherlands. So I decided to be active in politics, and I became a city council member. And I've been doing that for a while besides my work for Spark, which I found a really cool combination because I could be involved in improving my direct surroundings and at the same time be internationally active. And on both domains, contributing to society. So that has been a good balance.
And what was your field?
Well, we lived in Kenya in a very, the last years we lived in Kenya, we lived in a very insecure period. It was the insecure period around the elections in Kenya. And there were a lot of murders and a lot of fights and a lot of armed robberies going on. And that was my biggest fear. It was also at the same time that Al-Qaeda bombed the US embassy in Nairobi. And my dad, his office was just around the corner. And I think in that age, I mean, I was 14. That was just really scary. And I think my biggest fear, therefore, is that a society escalates into yeah, into being very harmful to each other. And I think until today, that's still my fear, that for someday I will be in a society where safety is not something that we can take for granted.
Yes. Do you plan to stay in Rwanda?
I do not, actually. I think because I moved around as a young child for so many years, I actually really think that I would want to stay in one place and really shoot my roots there. I really have the feeling that I really need that. Plus, I really love living in the Netherlands. I love the seasons. I love the safety. And what I also like, and the thing I hear daily, you're confronted with your privileges, and the fact you have a constant exposure to the gigantic opportunity gap between you and the people walking on the streets here. And I feel that that is something, like, that constant exposure is something that I find difficult living here. And I don't want to flee it, because in the Netherlands, of course, you don't have that. I want to keep on fighting that opportunity gap, but having that constant exposure of you being white and having more money, more opportunities, I find that quite intense.
Do you feel guilty?
Yeah, I think that goes hand in hand with guilt. I try to tell myself that I couldn't help it that my crib was somewhere else. And I try to translate my guilt into an energy to contribute. I think that's more effective. But on the other hand, I mean, of course you feel bad, and I mean, I can't help it, but still, I wish I could.
For you, what is being an adult?
Being an adult? I really like becoming an adult. I have my first gray hairs since last year, and I really like it. I like going through experiences and seeing patterns that you're used to, instead of everything being new and not knowing where to go. I like that the fact that you're becoming more mature, you're more relaxed, you're less involved with what other people want and think, so you can more enjoy the smaller things. And I have the feeling that now I'm old, that, you know, I love putting the alarm clock at 5:30 to listen to the birds and to watch the sunrise. That was not something the 21-year-old Giselle liked. I mean, I would rather just turn around in bed one more time. And yeah, I'm enjoying the trees. You know, I wouldn't, 21-year-old Giselle wouldn't have said that I would enjoy trees when I was 30, and I would actually want to take pictures of trees because they're so pretty. I have the feeling that now I'm enjoying these things more than before, and it makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you feel adult for the first time?
Oh, I think the first time I drove a car by myself. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Just feeling that freedom of, I really combined that with a major maturity. When you drive a car by yourself and you can go from A to B, then you're an adult. I remembered I felt myself so cool. I was on top of the world.
Yes, how old you were?
18.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. And as a woman, because in this society, men can be old and it's okay, but women don't have to be old. And I don't know you, but when I was young, I thought that 30 was like the end of my life.
Yeah.
A lot of women who are 30 say it's our best time because we feel confident and things like this. And I was thinking, just something to...
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I guess on the one hand, you do have the more confidence than when you were 21. And you still have, like... you still feel you're quite young. I think it's a good combination. I really like this age, but on the other hand, I don't really have an association with a certain age. So actually, I don't really mind being 30. I know a lot of big people are talking about the big 3-0, and it's like it's really it's something that you're really afraid of. I don't feel that at all. I just really like becoming more old. And I, what I also like is, you know, the fact that you can say, well, yeah, you just have a bit more life experience, and people just take you a bit more serious, maybe. Even last week, someone said, oh, that's so sweet of you. You're still so sweet and activistic. And I'm like, stop it, you know? I mean, I'm almost 30. I'm not sweet anymore. And you cannot say that my activism is sweet. And then that's, I'm happy to leave that frame in my 20s. And I hope not to take that frame with me to the 30s.
Yes, I totally understand. I was, I was happy to have 30 because I was happy to say, when someone talked to me like this, mm-hmm. I was happy to say, hey, I'm 30.
Exactly, exactly, yeah. Especially in the patriotic situations.
Yeah. Yes. Your parents are still alive?
Yes, both.
Okay. Did they take you seriously, and do they say see you as an adult?
I have the feeling that my parents always take me serious and always have seen me as an adult from a really young age. They really raised us very independently, and because we moved that often, we really had to learn how to adapt to new situations, and that became one of our assets. And I'm speaking of my asset and my brother's asset. And I think, therefore, they really had a certain trust in us from a young age that we could cope with situations ourselves. So yeah, I have the feeling they saw us as an adult really, really early.
You know what they did when they were 30?
I don't actually. No, I believe they just moved to Botswana.
How do you see the future of the world?
The future of the world? Well, being in Rwanda, seeing how quickly a society recovers of such a conflict, that makes me very positive. But on the other hand, you see that currently in Syria, there are genocides going on. Look at what's happening in Venezuela. The world powers are fighting. The European Union is unstable. The overpopulation in Africa is growing. The migration is increasing. And I didn't even start about climate change. And I feel that there are a lot of issues currently in the world. And I'm also, I mean, if you look at this society and if you get a bit more about the history of the genocide and how that happened, it makes me a bit dark when I think about like how people live together. And that genocide is something that every person can get into. And that makes me a bit sad, the fact that it's just so much, goes so much hand in hand with humans and society. And it's a large risk. And that's, that's scary. But on the other hand, I try to stay positive, because, I mean, look at how pretty the world is. And if you look here, I mean, how pretty the trees are, how green it is, and how lovely the people are here. So I think we have to... be very positive and keep on fighting conflict.
And how do you see your future?
It's so funny because so many people always think that I have my future planned for the coming 8 years, what my ambitions are, but I actually haven't really planned a lot. I enjoy my work for Spark. I've enjoyed my work in politics. If there's another opportunity in politics on my way, then maybe I'll take it, maybe not. I just really want to contribute, and I hope to be doing that for the coming years. I do think I'll be living in the Netherlands.
Do you want children?
I would really want children, yeah. But it's not something you should plan. I think it's just as my career. I've never really planned something. So if it's coming by, then hopefully I'll, as they say here, I hope I'll be blessed one day, but it's something that I don't want to plan too much. We'll just see how things go. Why do I want children? Because I see, when I look at my parents, I see how much pleasure they get out of my brother and I. My brother now has a child. I see the effect of that on my parents. I think having children enriches your life on a really nice way. And I think it's just really nice to take a child by the hand and have it explore the world and have it form its own opinions and have it grow and think of the world and how he or she will contribute to the world. And I think that is something I would really enjoy doing, raising a child with, to become a strong individual.
For example, if tomorrow the occasion to have a child is here, do you feel ready to have?
Yeah, I think I will be ready. Yeah, I would be ready to get a child, I think. Although, of course, it would be very scary. But no, so many strong women have been having children before me, so I'm sure I can do that too.
Do you have a religion or a spiritual approach?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I'm baptized. I did the communion, so my parents kind of raised me through the Catholic religion. I would not necessarily say that that's my line now. I would say that although it's more like an ideology, the social democratic values are very playing an important role in my life. Yeah, so combating inequality, that is one of the things that I value highly.
What is your relationship with love, engagement, marriage, the notion of couple?
Yeah, well, it's of course quite difficult becoming 30. You see everyone around you ticking the boxes of marriage, buying a house, getting a child, getting a dog. I feel that I do feel the pressure to go tick all the boxes and finalize every level. But I also think we have to give ourselves a break a bit more. That change starts with me. So yeah, let's not put too much pressure on checking the boxes. And let's just see how life goes and take it day by day.
Yes. And your parents, are they involved in this? They put pressure on you?
Yeah, no, my parents don't put pressure at all. My grandmother did, though. She passed away a couple of weeks ago. She put a lot of pressure on me, especially because she said she saw that I was quite focused on career and contributing and working hard. And it was her concern that I would forever be alone because I would make my work my baby and my husband. I promised her just before she died that I would also focus on starting a family life and not fully focus on career and yeah.
Mm. Is it something hard for you to focus on building a family more than your work?
Well, I think that goes for each woman. It's really difficult to focus on both fully. I do think you have to sacrifice somewhere if you want to have a child. I'm really well aware of that. Unfortunately, the society is not that equal that the sacrifice is as big as the man has to do. For the woman, it's just a bit more, and I'm really well aware of that. And that's unfortunate, but that's also something we should be fighting for, to make that even more equal.
About our generation, mm-hmm. we heard a lot that we move, we are not stable. Do you think it's a sign of immaturity?
Yeah, it's so funny because people say we're immature, we're lazy. And I think people should not confuse laziness with the fact that our generation just has not faced any large wars or large issues or large incidents. I mean, we can't help it that we have not been faced a war. But that doesn't make us lazy. I see a lot of activism around me. I see a lot of young women fighting sexism, you know, inequality, oppression. I see a lot of energy around me, also from our generation. Look at the entire movement around climate change. How many people worldwide are fighting this and fighting the policies around climate change? But I think the generations before us, I mean, our parents have, in the Netherlands, our parents have been fighting for a 5-day work week. The generations before that have been fighting for women to be able to vote. You know, these are such a basic rights that we are used to. And the fact that we're used to that doesn't mean that we're lazy. And I do see currently that there's still a lot of things we should be fighting. And I see a generation that is fighting for that. I mean, yesterday it was International Women's Day. I mean, I don't know what about your social media, but my social media was full of strong women fighting for their rights, you know? And it's maybe not as fundamental as voting, as the ability to work, as getting education. In the West, then, I'm very much aware that I'm talking in the Western perspective. It's maybe not as fundamental, but there's still a lot to change. And so, I don't think we are lazy. Mm-hmm. I think we're strong.
And what is the greatest strength of our generation?
The greatest strength of our generation? I think if you look at like the West, one of the strengths is that the majority had access to really good education, and therefore we have a very large group of well-educated people, human beings, with a lot of skills. And I think that's an asset because we have to transform this into action to bring us further. And I see a lot of willingness to do that. I see a lot of people doing it already. But if you look at the generations before us, I think it's not as like the population of highly educated is just not as large as our generation now. And I think we're very fortunate and we're very privileged, but it's also our largest asset, which we should use.
If you can imagine a superhero, if you can create a superhero.
If I can create a superhero, that's such a cool question. Sometimes I have the feeling that, remember, you have Harry Potter, you have this blanket where people can lie under and then they're invisible. I think that would be my superhero, a person with a blanket that he or she can go under and then can go into situations and just observe and then take the blanket off and help the people in conflict, find a solution to the conflict, but firstly observe when not visible. That would be my superhero.
Wow,
interesting. Yeah.
It would be a woman or a man?
I'm not that... I don't mind. Of course I would want to say a woman, but that's maybe a cliché. I do think that if in conflict resolutions, I do think women have a lot of competences that are really relevant. So maybe that superhero with the blanket would be a woman, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is your... philosophy of life?
My philosophy of life? Well, I have a strong ideology, and I think this ideology can also be seen as my philosophy on how I would want to live my life to combat the gaps, to fight for equality, to make sure that when I leave this earth that somewhere I've contributed to increasing the gap between opportunities of people. So I think my philosophy is that I want to wake up every day and do something to contribute to that. Either way, wherever, I don't mind. And it also doesn't have to be international, it can also be national. I mean, even the local level I really enjoyed. But yeah, I would say that's my ideology/philosophy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.